Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins.
Welcome to a new episode of the Realm of Heroes and Monsters Storytime with me, your host, freshly shaven AP Fuchs. Yes, last episode, if you're doing the listen and watch version on YouTube, there was massive scruff going on, and I said it's going to be gone, and sure enough, here we are, and we're basically doing this double thing. We'll call ourselves Matt Murdock or something like that, right? And I guess you could be more manly because you have stubble instead of a smooth baby bump face. I don't know. Anyway, whatever. Welcome to the show. And if my math is correct, including this show, there are 10 episodes to go for season 3. So, including this, we have 10 episodes. And then that's it. Season 3 will be done. And regarding season 4, there's some things I'm going to wrap up first. And then I'll do a season 4. But yeah, I want to get some other stuff done first in between. Why? Because some stuff does get delayed because of these other projects. So, we need to, stay on top of things. So, that's sort of the plan in general. Finish season 3, do some stuff, season 4. So that's how it's going to be going for the podcast part of this. But anyway, welcome to this new episode, and I hope you really like this story time adventure because it harkens back to the old days where, again, the movies I'm talking about, where there was all sorts of themes going on. It was like, for example, there was like the disaster movie era, right? There was the fire. Trauma inferno area era rather and that kind of stuff, and like everything was kind of followed these patterns, and we see it in modern movies today, of course, too, right, where there's certain like thrillers are a big thing, or vampires are a big thing, and of course right now superheroes are a huge thing and stuff like that. So this was a story that you're going to hear. It's called Inferno, and it calls back to those days when there was like massive genre sweeps across the cinema. But in this time, you get to close your eyes and relax and listen to a story and use the theater of your mind to imagine what's happening. So we're going to do that, but first we're going to do story before the story, because I'm going to bring up something that we haven't touched on yet, and I hope you find it interesting. Okay, it's story before the story time. So of course, this season we're reading Flash Attack, and I was thinking about, because we've been doing a lot of non-fiction type items in the story before the story segment over the past good while. So let's get back into the world of fiction and the stories about stories being part of everyday life in regards to fiction. And what's interesting is you talk to any writer or any artist who creates a story flow, you're going to, there's the old saying, right, write what you know, And that's true, right? We can only write what we know. I mean, if you have to make up something, it's still based on some sort of foundation of what we know. No matter how wild your imagination goes, there's always a rooting point in your knowledge if you follow the rabbit trail back down to its origination source. So that being said, though, so these things that you know end up coming out through the work that you're producing. And as you're creating it, you're recognizing that, yes, I'm writing down stuff I know. And of course, I'm imagining things, but at the same time, it's all rooted in stuff I know, and et cetera, right? So you finish the project, and the project's done, and, general rule for writing a book is you take time away from your first draft, like, for a good few weeks, to a point where, like, you almost start to forget a little bit, and the idea is when you go back to do your second and third drafts and so on, you're coming at it from a fresh angle. Right, you're coming out with fresh eyes, fresh head. You've forgotten some of the story or specific moments or whatever, so you have the chance to be more objective. But what's an interesting thing that comes out of that is sometimes, not often, but sometimes, as you're going through the work, you're finding stuff that, yes, you're seeing what you wrote in terms of what you know, but what you're also finding is bizarre little scraps of pieces of your life, your memories, your experiences, your feelings, thoughts, all sorts of things in these like tiny little sentences here and there peppered throughout the book. And what these are, these little items, are items that you didn't consciously write. right? Because I mean, when you're doing it, you're listening to stories, so stories dictating it all. But what the story is also telling you is stuff that you've suppressed, stuff that you don't remember offhand, off the top of your head. You know, not offhand knowledge, that kind of stuff. It's items that have happened to you, or thoughts you've had, or things you've went through that you've put away in the back of your mind and haven't thought about for like 20 years. But suddenly these things are coming up in the work, and you didn't remember when you're creating it, putting those things down. But again, the subconscious is very sneaky and has a way to insert things. So in terms of story, it's interesting that story becomes this avenue, this vessel to tap into things that have been suppressed for who knows how long, right? Your mileage may vary in that regard. But the point is pulling out these things that you're not consciously aware of. And in fact, if anything, it's cathartic and therapeutic, because now you're digging out stuff, whether good or bad, from your past, and you're putting it out in front of you, and you're able to work through it, right? But again, it's involuntary, and that's what makes it fascinating, is that it's involuntary. Your subconscious finds these little bits and pieces, and it's so involuntary that as you're creating and putting these items down, you even recognize that these items that you're putting down are forgotten items. That kind of dawns on you later when you go over it again. But during the actual moment of creation, it's just part of the story. But yeah, so I find that really cool that your subconscious digs up these sort of little mini treasure chests, if you will, maybe good or bad treasure chests. But the point is, it digs them up and pulls them out, puts them in front of you and saying, yeah, this is also what you know. And you should put this in the story because it's going to make it better. And it's also going to help you as a person, because now these items that were suppressed are now back up to the surface, out in the open, and you can work through them that way. So that is what is neat about that part of it. And that's what I wanted to point out, that story is everything, that even deep down in your subconscious or sub-subconscious, if you want to call that, somewhere inside the forgotten parts, no, it comes out at some point, and fiction can do that. Not always, but sometimes. And when it does, it's a real treat, because it just enriches the project, it makes it better, and of course, in turn, will make it better for the reader. So that's for this week. I want to talk about the sub-subconscious and pulling out the stuff that isn't normally pulled out. All right. Now, without further ado, I present to you Story Time, going back to the era of disaster movies. Enjoy. Inferno. The walls burst orange and yellow behind the dark gray clouds of smoke that engulfed the room. There was a child in here, somewhere, alone, maybe dead. Wes and his crew had been called to the fire on Elm Street over an hour ago when a neighbor saw flames burst forth from the house's windows like soda from a shaken-up can. Now the place had burned right through and was on the verge of collapse. The hydrant Wes and his crew had tried plugging into was without water pressure, and there seemed nothing the city could do about it. Four of the five family members who lived here had been rescued, the dad suffering from third-degree burns as he tried to shield the others from the inferno. But this kid, Sean, his mother had screamed, was still somewhere inside. Wes got low and tried to stay out of the smoke, but the whole house was full of it save for a scant 6 inches above the floor. The searing heat from the surrounding flames penetrated his protective gear. Sweat coated his body, and his oxygen mask barely kept up. He tested the first stair leading to the top level. It seemed okay, so he stepped on it and checked the next one. That one was okay too, so he kept going. The second last step gave way beneath his foot. He tumbled forward onto the burning floor of the top landing. Somewhere, far below, Wes! It was Rick, a seasoned firefighter and his best friend. I'm fine, he replied. Carefully, he pressed against the floor to push himself up. The burning wood cracked on the left and broke clean through on the right, making his arms plunge into a fiery hole. He yanked his arm free, regained his footing, and went onward. He kept low and stepped around the gaps forming in the floor as the top level began to fall in on itself. The crackle and roar of angry flame rushed into his ears. Each door he opened was a gate to hell. One released a fireball that sent him on his back. The floor groaned and creaked beneath him. "Damn it, get up," he thought. "Get up." He lunged himself forward in a mighty sit-up, the oxygen equipment on his back weighing a ton. On his feet again, he opened the final door. Flame and smoke burst out. He shielded himself with his forearms. So damn hot. He thought he heard Rick calling for him again, but couldn't be sure. A cry, off to the right. Wes looked. A massive pile of toys and clothes and what looked like a chair by a closet. There was no cry for help, just an anguished wail as the kid trapped behind this makeshift barrier made Wes's heart jump into a panic. "It's okay. I'm coming to get you," Wes said. Another wail. Wes dug his hands into the pile and began pulling away at what had to be a closet's worth of clothes, all packed around a chair that acted like a tent frame. The clothes were ablaze for the first couple feet, but had been so densely stuffed they had yet burned through. Interspersed throughout the web of burning clothes were playsets and stuffed animals and building blocks the size of tissue boxes. "Smart thinking, kid." Wes broke through and waved at the smoke. Cast in the orange glow of flame was a boy that looked around 7 or 8. "Sean." The kid's face was black with soot, and he had his hands over his mouth, his shoulders heaving up and down as he tried to breathe. Immediately, Wes gave him the fresh air off the oxygen tank. The kid breathed and breathed the clean air, and as much as Wes wanted the boy to keep going, he had to get him out of here. He took the mask back. Wood snapped. The roar of flame sent Wes stumbling into the closet. The boy shrieked as Wes tumbled on top of him. Wes pushed himself off the kid, knowing the source of the kid's pain was the hot fire gear. The door frame and door collapsed in a heap of fire. Blocked. No way out. Window. Wes stepped over to it and smashed it with his elbow. The glass shattered and smoke billowed its way out. Wes peered over the frame. It was around a 20-foot drop to the ground. The floor lit up around his feet. He stepped through the flame, his own safety be damned. The boy quickly went up in fire. "No!" Wes shouted and patted the boy all over, putting him out. He glanced over his shoulder. The window. It was the only way. Wes ripped off his oxygen mask and unstrapped the tank. Sharp smoke filled his lungs, and as he gagged and coughed, he gave the mask to the boy again and got to work removing the tank from his back. Again, the boy started on fire. Wes patted him out. "Should I cover him with my body and delay the inevitable?" No, he couldn't. This kid was still alive and still had a chance. The window. Fire surrounded them. Wes took off his coat and gritted his teeth as his clothes caught fire. "Keep breathing into the mask," he shouted, wincing at the pain as the inferno stung his skin. He wrapped the boy in the coat, as if swaddling him in a towel. An explosion rocked the house. There was no time to waste. Wes picked up the kid, and through the heavy smoke, barely saw the fear in the child's eyes. Wes's shirt was on fire, skin searing, his arms shook from the trauma. Fire swallowed the window's surrounding wall. He took Sean and tossed him through the blaze and out the window. A second after, he thought he should have warned the poor kid, but that would have only made the boy tense up and increase the risk of injury even more. Wes's hair and face lit with flame. He tried patting it out, but the room was too hot and he started a fire the moment he put himself out. Screaming as the fire took him, Wes prayed the kid landed safely, and also a safe distance from the house. Broken bones and a few wrists, maybe the worst case scenario. He should have called Rick, should have told his friend to catch the boy, or be ready, or something. But there hadn't been any time, and all he could do was hope he had somehow preserved the boy's life. The floor gave way, and Wes fell through. He hit the level beneath. Burning floor landed on top of him. Agony raced through his body as his skin sizzled and popped while he cooked. Sharp and hot smoke filled his lungs, and soon he couldn't breathe. Scorching heat ripped through him head to toe, causing his whole body to lock with pain. Flames roared above, Smoke flowed in. Bursts of orange flickered behind the dark gray smoke, just as it had when he first entered. Thanks for sticking around after the credits, and we're gonna be a little bit silly and we're gonna talk farts. But here it is. Okay, farts are always funny no matter what your age is. We all know that. No one always admits to it, but we all know that they're funny. But the point is, here's a fact. Okay, this is true. All right, so throughout the course of a day, you inhale approximately 4 liters worth of other people's farts. Throughout the course of the day, you're taking in basically a giant jug of milk, a gallon of milk, more or less, and it's all farts, and it's you're getting that into your lungs. So if you're a farter and you feel that your efforts aren't getting anywhere, rest assured that your fart efforts are being appreciated by multiple people who are taking in one sip at a time of what you let go. So for you, if you're discouraged about your farts, know that they're all not for naught. All right? Okay. Anyway, that's your fart fact for the week. Take it to work, take it to school, tell your friends, and tell them, yeah, today you're going to inhale a gallon worth of farts. Enjoy. All right, peace.